Hi, this is Ken McCarthy of Jazz on the Tube, and as you know, we've got world's largest collection of annotated classical jazz videos on the entire internet, and possibly in the world, even in the real world. We also have a podcast section, which we do irregularly. When something inspires us, we like to get on the phone and talk with people about their work. One of the things that we love to focus on is jazz educators. It's an area of jazz that maybe not all jazz fans are completely familiar with, and I want to tell you that it will greatly enrich your life if you become more familiar with it. Just from a historical perspective, I wonder how many people know the name Richard Davies. Well, Richard Davies is the guy that taught Louis Armstrong how to play the trumpet, or in those days, the cornet. He also happened to teach Dave Bartholomew, the great pioneer of rhythm and blues, the trumpet. So there's an example of a really important name in the history of jazz that some people don't know. Now you know Richard Davies, and may give you some perspective on New Orleans. There's also Captain Walter Diet of DuSable High School, who taught everybody from Sun Ra to Nat King Cole and everybody in between. I wonder how many people know his name. And then in Fort Worth, you had a fantastic teacher named G.A. Baxter, who taught Ornette Coleman, Dewey Redman, King Curtis, Charles Moffett, Prince Lasha. So when you see a great musician on the stage, think a little bit not only about his or her artistry, but about the society and the culture that helped bring that artist to fruition, because there's no such thing as a self-taught musician. You know, maybe you don't get formal lessons, but in the worst case, but you're in a climate, you're in a neighborhood, you're in a community where music is everywhere and you just pick it up. But you didn't, you know, sit in a room by yourself and figure it out. You did it in a community way. Then, of course, there's academic programs. And, you know, almost every jazz musician that you know has been through some kind of academic program. There are some exceptions, but the norm is that they typically played in their high school band, and that's what this call is about. This year I discovered, and this is the great thing about jazz, no matter how much time you spend delving into it, you always discover new things that you didn't even know existed. And I discovered that Jazz at Lincoln Center does an annual competition called Essentially Ellington, and they bring together the great high school bands of America, and they play. And somebody wins. I mean, music competition to me is kind of a strange concept in some ways. I understand it has a function, right? But obviously, good music is good music, and ranking it is, you know, how do you rank great music? But anyway, it's a good program. It's a really, really, really good program. And what amazes me about this program is how great these bands are. If you've never seen the Essentially Ellington competition, just go to YouTube, you know, Google it, whatever, you'll find the videos. These bands are amazing, and you have to remember, these are kids. These are high school kids. They're in their teenage years. Now, everybody's got favorites, and again, you can't rank. When music is good, you can't rank it, but everybody's got a favorite, and favorite's a matter of taste. It's sort of an irrational thing, but my favorite is the Beloit Memorial High School Band, especially the class of 2014. I watch this video over and over again, and if I'm down, it lifts my spirits. It should be something that every jazz fan in the world sees for two reasons. One, it's just beautifully played music, beautifully executed. And two, you see young people, you know, teenagers playing the music, knowing the music, loving the music, and enjoying the music. I've never seen people enjoy music so much in performance as this band. So I got on the internet and I reached out to Chris Behrens, who's band director at Beloit Memorial, and I just wanted to talk with him about these kids and the program and him and, you know, what's going on in Beloit. Now, Chris, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Now, I kind of know the Midwest a little bit. You know, I have relatives in Milwaukee. I've been to Chicago. I've been to St. Louis. Where's Beloit? I've looked at it on the map. It's kind of in the south middle of Wisconsin.
Yeah, correct. We are exactly in the south central part of Wisconsin. We're just a few miles north of Illinois, of the border, kind of right in between Madison, Milwaukee, and Chicago. And right in the heart of the Midwest.
Gotcha. So you're not really a suburb of a big city.
Not exactly. Beloit is about 38,000 people, and I describe it as a you know, an urban city, you know, blue collar type town.
Okay, and this is my very first question is, how on earth did you put together a band of this quality, drawing from a city of just 38,000 people? Like I'm floored. Like if you were in Chicago, I'd say I get it. If you were out in Berkeley, Bay Area, I get it. If you're in New York, I get it. But you know, 38,000, that's a small city, right? I mean, that's not a metropolis by any stretch of the imagination, and yet these kids are playing like crazy. What's going on in Beloit? I guess is my question.
Yeah, that's a question I get asked often, and it's hard to answer. All I can share some possibilities of how it's happened. I mean, first of all, I have to say that, you know, jazz is a huge passion of mine. It's something that's, I mean, I went to the University of Illinois, studied jazz piano there for my undergrad. And, you know, obviously, I am still a performer. I still like to play myself in, you know, small groups and whenever I can. So when I'm teaching, it's just, you know, it's something that I feel that's important in our program, and it's developed. I mean, we didn't even have a jazz band at the high school here when I first came. It was, you know, something that started out as, you know, Monday nights once a week, and then we added, you know, a morning or two rehearsal before school, started at 7 a.m., and then within the last 3 or 4 years, it's now part of the school day. We have actually, both of our jazz bands now meet for credit during the school day, and we also have a jazz improvisation course. So
when did this program get started at Beloit? What year?
I've been at the high school since 2002.
And okay,
I was at the middle school that feeds the high school program since 1996. So
gotcha.
The first time we auditioned for Essential Ellington was 2009.
Okay.
And I mean that making that competition, being a finalist, has really changed the program. I mean, it's a huge motivation for the students to go to New York. We've been fortunate enough to do it the last 5 years in a row.
Wow.
And it's just rolling now. I mean, we have a really strong second band in the program. We also have a pretty strong middle school feeder. And it's just become, you know, something that kids that are into music that, you know, like jazz, it's something they want to do.
Well, I hope that the city of Beloit and the high school administration and community, I hope they're proud and they understand the significance of what you guys are accomplishing with your program. I hope you're getting a lot of community support and encouragement in what you're doing.
Yeah, we absolutely do. I mean, it starts with our administration. I mean, there's just not that many schools that have jazz offered during the day as a class. So that right there is huge. And then when we do go to these, like to New York, it's obviously not free. It's a big expense. So we're talking about at least $30,000 to send, you know, the band out there every year. And we get part of that from the school district, and then about two-thirds of it we raise through community from donations, basically, and performing. And every year we've raised the amount we've needed. So we definitely have support.
That's great.
Huge.
Do you have a specific web page for people that want to contribute to the program?
Well, yeah, we do. I'm going to have to look it up here as I talk.
Okay, that's fine.
It's through our Performing Arts Parent Association, which is called PAPAS, PAPAS, Parent Advocates for Performing Arts in the Schools. And I think if you do a Google search for that, you should be able to find it. Yeah, it's papasbeloit.org.
PAPAS.
Yep, Beloit, BELOIT .org. And there is a donate button on that page, and you can specify where you want the donation to go. You just type in jazz or band or whatever you would like.
Great, because we definitely have subscribers in Wisconsin and in Northern Illinois in your region, and I hope at a minimum that people in that region would consider supporting your efforts, and I actually hope everybody who loves jazz and loves to see kids play jazz would consider it. You know, we always say, you know, keep jazz alive. You know, part of that is the radio stations. Part of that is the the venue producers. Part of that is the publications. Part of that is the Jazz on the Tube website. But a big part of it is the education programs, because no education and no jazz. I mean, it's a very simple formula. You got to have these educational institutions providing the foundations so that people that decide to go on, that are inspired to go on in the music, have their chops so that they can, you know, take advantage of college programs and they can start playing with groups and develop their art. So this education piece is really, really important. Well, let me ask you about this 2014 band. And again, I don't want to rank or say one orchestra is better than another or one year is better than another. It's not my purpose here, but they are the most charming people. And I mean that in the biggest, broadest, best sense of the term. I mean, they literally charmed me. I've never seen people like so overtly, openly enjoy playing together in my life. I mean, maybe I've seen a couple of other occasions somewhere, but I never seen anybody, young or old, have such an obvious good time playing. Now, that's not even to talk about their musicianship, which was extraordinary. I mean, it's just extraordinary. It's as good as it gets. But they were enjoying themselves. So was that their character, or is that something that you encourage? It was just a very unusual and enjoyable thing to see.
Yeah, and I guess this is a comment we get all the time. I mean, even when we were out there this year, this year's band was no different, as well as 2015 and probably 2013 as well. But yeah, this comment comes up a lot, and you know, I've given that some thought, and all I can think of is that the students that are in our groups here really enjoy playing this great music. They're very passionate about it. They're very encouraging to each other. And I think that's what you're seeing come through.
Yeah.
It's just their sheer love for this music and playing.
Yeah, their support of each other. And everybody will get a chance to see this video. I'm going to put it on the page below. Make sure you watch it and watch it through the whole thing. The Black and Tan Fantasy, amazing, just amazing. You can see them, number one, they're listening to each other. And number two, they're enjoying each other's performances. It's like they're at a party, except they're in a jazz orchestra taking care of business very, very well. So it's just one of those things that just happened. You must be doing something to encourage it, I'm sure. It's funny, in history, some of the famous jazz high school band leaders have been known to be really strict. I had a friend, Jerome Cooper, the late great percussionist, who was a student of Captain Diet's, Walter Diet, in DuSable, and it was a tight band. And he said that Captain Diet was hard on them. He said, in fact, he said this to me: if you weren't strong, you couldn't make it. So I have a feeling there's different ways to come at the music, and you're creating an atmosphere of just where people are having fun and enjoying themselves, but also serious. I mean, it's interesting. It's beyond jazz, beyond art even. It's really interesting to see people who are obviously deadly serious about what they're doing, because it's coming out in the quality of what they're doing, but they're also loose and having a good time. It's almost, you know, the epitome of the spirit of jazz, right? I mean, we've already got classical music, and classical music is great, and, you know, that's good. But, you know, we've got this other music that allows for improvisation, that allows for surprises, that allows for spontaneity, that allows for humor, that allows for fun and profundity as well. And it's great to see this coming out in a high school band. Let's talk a little bit about the Essentially Ellington experience. So you say that 2009 was the first year you made it to the finals. What does it mean to get to the finals? What's the process? What did the bands go through? How many bands are you competing against?
Right. So the process starts usually in October, when the current year's repertoire is released. And starting, I believe, in 2009, they as well as, obviously having music of Duke Ellington, but they also started introducing other composers. So in 2009, we had four Ellington pieces and four from Benny Carter.
Ah.
And then I think they've included, since then, Dizzy Gillespie, Mary Lou Williams. Last year, they had Fletcher Henderson. And so as far as the competition goes, you have to select three pieces to record and then submit by They usually end of January. So one of them always has to be an Ellington piece. One of them always has to be at least one from the current year. And then the third piece could be, you know, another of the new selections or anything since they started the festival back in 1998. So there's a huge library. I don't know. I think there's like 80 songs or something like that. And what you do is you select music that best fits your band. You know, what do you think you can record and that, you know, highlights whatever your strengths are, basically. So I give a lot of time, you know, usually in the summer we'll start looking at some of the music that might work for us. Mm-hmm. And then we'll, in October when the new stuff comes out, which we already know what it is, we've already listened to it, we won't see the music until then, but I've got, you know, a pretty good idea of what we're going to record this year already. So that's the process. And then we work on, you know, we'll work on that. Usually, I mean, we'll usually pick about five songs and kind of, and we've even recorded, you know, four or five of them and then picked the best three to send in. And then mid-February, the finalists are announced and they select three from each of the five regions. They've created five regions within the United States and Canada, and the top three scoring bands are invited from each region to New York in May for a three-day festival. And usually it's been anywhere from, you know, 95 to 110 bands that have submitted recordings.
And they base it judged based on the recording.
Yep, and it's a blind audition. So the judges that are screening the recordings are not aware of, you know, where they're coming from or what school it is.
Great. And who's your recordist? You must be pretty good, he or she.
We record everything here in house. We've got a studio and some recording equipment, and we just set up. Basically, we set up recording Monday evenings, our recording night, and we'll start recording just to see where we're at in mid-November. Usually, is the first time we set stuff up. So we'll use those recordings to listen and critique ourselves and determine what we need to do to get things where they need to be before the end of January.
And what's the festival experience like? So what do you get into a bus? Probably get on a plane.
Yeah, we get on a plane and we go to New York usually a day before the festival. We usually play a gig the night before the festival starts. We do some sightseeing. We've been to Harlem. And then, you know, when the festival begins, it's 3 days. So it begins with a question and answer session with Wynton Marsalis, which is really cool. Kids get up and ask him questions. And there's a dinner with everybody, a jam session that follows that. There's sectionals with members of the Jazz Lincoln Center Orchestra. And then a rehearsal with, you're assigned a mentor from someone from the band that works with you for a rehearsal the day before the competition starts. And then there's 2 days of the competition and an evening concert and awards on the last night. So it's an incredible experience. I mean, the kids get to meet and talk to the members of the Jazz and Lincoln Center Orchestra. And a lot of them have become our mentors over the last 5 years, especially. They also send one of the guys out to work with the band in usually April. So it's just an amazing event.
Wow. Yeah, I am just filled with admiration for what Wynton Marsalis has done with Jazz at Lincoln Center. It's really amazing. There's no other word for it. You know, not only are the programs obviously are great, you know, lots of interesting music, and it's great to have the music performed in such a nice setting, but the educational work that Jazz at Lincoln Center is doing is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. I was lucky to be able to attend their, I don't know what it was, what exactly, I guess they had a bunch of high school kids. Yeah, it was summer camp. It was a two-week summer camp for high school performers at Bard College, which is near where I live upstate. It's about 100 miles north of New York City. And it was great, you know. I guess it was by, you know, they took applications from all over the country and Canada, actually the world.
Right.
And it was fabulous to meet the kids and see them working and a great experience for them, obviously a life-changing experience. And they've done you and I were talking earlier before the recording started, they've done some really special and important work in Cuba, helping the young high school age musicians in that country. They've been down there a lot. Jazz at Lincoln Center's been down there a lot. They brought the kids up, I think April, to stay and study and perform at Lincoln Center. One of the kids at the summer camp was from Cuba, and I was talking with him, and they've done a lot for him. They brought him to New Orleans for, I think, a whole month. And this is great. This is how the music gets spread. And without these kinds of support, there can be no music. So what Wynton's doing is just unbelievable. Now, there's some other people involved, obviously, in the education program at Jazz at Lincoln Center, and it's a lot of people, but is there anybody or a couple of people that come to mind in particular that, you know, your band, your orchestra has worked with a lot, or you've had unique contacts with, or anything you want to say about them?
Yeah, well, the Jazz at Lincoln Center members, first of all, are just incredibly, you know, gracious with their time and wanting to build connections with these students. For example, we've had Victor Goins, who is a tenor and clarinetist with the band, also teaches at Northwestern, which is really close to us, Northwestern University. And we have him come up and work with the band usually every November or December. And we've had other clinicians. Marcus Printup's been out here a couple times. We've had Kenny Rampton out to work with us. So just that whole mentoring aspect, I mean, that's been really important for what we've been able to do, getting that input and from these professionals that play this music all the time. As well as Ronald Carter, who was the director of the Jazz Studies Program at Northern Illinois, who's also done work with Essentially Ellington for a long time, and Reggie Thomas, who's now the current director at Northern Illinois. Both of those guys also come and work with our bands. So that's huge for us to have that input and critique and feedback from them.
Yeah, you're very well located in that Chicago's. It's not around the block, but it's not insurmountably far away either.
Right, right. We're not far from going and hearing a lot of stuff. We go down to the Jazz Showcase from time to time, take a carload or two down there, or, you know, go down and see a concert at NIE when they have a guest artist. So yeah, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere, but then again, we're close enough to go out and hear some jazz if we want.
That's kind of ideal. I live in an area, it's Mid-Hudson Valley, they call it. It's also Catskills. It has a bunch of different names, and we're 100 miles out of New York City. But interestingly enough, until very, very recently, Sonny Rollins was my neighbor. He was just a couple of houses That's up cool. the street. Jack DeJohnette lives up here. Pat Metheny lives up here. So it's kind of the best of both worlds to be sort of in a somewhat quieter part of the country, and yet you get in a car, and next thing you know, you're in the big city with all the resources of a big city. So it's almost perfect. Well, great. You know, Chris, this has been fantastic, and I want to thank you for taking the time to give us a little bit of insight into the background of this really outstanding group. And as I said before, everybody just scroll down the page, and you'll see this performance that I'm talking about. You're going to love it. And it's so encouraging to everybody who loves jazz to see young people playing the music and young people playing it so well. And, you know, as fans and devotees of the music, we're really grateful to all of our educators who are doing such good work to make the music available to the people who love it. I was talking with a guy that's been around forever. I mean, he played at Birdland. He's a bass player, and I could kick myself for forgetting his name. Hopefully he'll forgive me. He's written a lot of books. And we were talking about this issue of, you know, will jazz live? And he says, you know, jazz is like playing chess. There are people that like doing it, so it's not going to die. You know, I mean, as long, you know, people just like it. So that's true, but there also needs to be the infrastructure. And all praise to Wynton Marsalis for doing this. I really admire. Yeah, I mean, you know, this. I'm 50. I'm going to be 57 soon, right? So when I was coming up, you know, it was basically the late 70s and the 80s. And I was in New York City, and, you know, jazz was on the ropes. You know, people were playing in tiny little clubs. There weren't that many clubs at the time, believe it or not. People had been playing in lofts, but everybody got priced out of lofts when Soho got fancy. Labels were struggling. Artists were struggling. There really weren't many educational programs. I mean, there was always Berkeley. There was always North Texas. But, you know, that's pretty much it. And I wondered, as a jazz fan, I wondered, wow, are we going to have this music 20, 30, 40 years from now? And, wow, look at where we are. We've got all these amazing high school programs now. We've got all these college programs, which we never had before. We've got festivals up the wazoo that never existed before. So things are really looking up. But the thing that gives me the most encouragement, I'll tell you, Chris, honestly, of everything I've ever seen is the existence of your band. Anybody who's worried about the future jazz, just watch this video and put your mind at ease. But also remember, these efforts just need our support. They don't come out of thin air. So if anybody's inspired to contribute to Beloit's program, it's papasbeloit.org, papasbeloit.org. Chris Behrens, so great to meet you. I hope I get to meet you in person. And thank you for the wonderful work you're doing for jazz.
Hey, thank you so much for having us and for all the kind words, and that we really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome.